All right, it's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Plenty to talk about tonight. To quote Jerry Reed, we got a long way to go and a short time to get there. We've got NFL playoffs now set as the Colts advance to the AFC Championship game, surprisingly, go to New England. IU basketball continuing on, wins at home over the weekend against Ohio State and hosts Penn State on Tuesday night. And, of course, we've got a national championship game going on tonight in college football with Ohio State and Oregon facing off. But the biggest story of the weekend by far was the Colts going out to Denver, beating former Colts quarterback Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. A Colts team that, let's be fair here, 11-5 during the regular season, but they had some ups, they had some downs, they had a lot of question marks all year long. But when the time came and the playoffs now on the road, a huge, huge win for Andrew Luck and his, if you want to get this far already, his legacy as a quarterback in the NFL. More importantly, though, taking a group of guys that's, in my opinion, still trying to figure out the best way to use everybody. And especially in the offensive side with an offensive line that's been banged up, they've got a little bit of continuity there finally and played their absolute best game of the year, I think, up front, certainly from this group of players. And then defensively to hold Peyton Manning and the Broncos to 13 points on the night on the road in Denver Broncos Stadium out there in Mile High. They are surprising me from this point forward, and they did this weekend because I said it. I still don't think they're that good at every spot. They're decent here. They're decent there. They're great at quarterback. But this defense has been all over the map. But that really doesn't matter when you play the way they did, and they played phenomenal.
No, it doesn't. Holding Peyton Manning to 6 points for the final, whatever, 50 minutes of the game on his home field. He's hurt. He's not hurt. Whatever. His arm wasn't hurt. Yeah, I know you need your legs to throw, but when you can't throw the ball 5 yards down the field, the Colts' recipe for defense was excellent. The recipe for protecting their quarterback was excellent. The only marks on Andrew Luck's jersey was him sliding for first down.
He didn't get touched most of the day. He's been getting pummeled all year long.
And it makes you wonder, Peyton Manning played defense for the Broncos yesterday? Did he line up at linebacker and couldn't get around with his bad quads?
No.
He didn't. Oh, so that was Denver's defense on their home field against a guy who'd played one road playoff game in his life. One or two, I can't remember. They go on the road their first year, lost at New England, and lost at Baltimore, the two. So this was his third one, right? Big spot. Let's see, who's the running back? Dan Heron. What was he doing last year? Sacking groceries on the practice squad?
Something like that.
Again, against Denver's vaunted defense, Dave. Reggie Wayne, immaterial. Mm-hmm. Surplus to goods was thrown at one time. And the Colts made it look easy yesterday. And you never thought you would say that. But as we talked about last Wednesday, we as Colts fans have seen Peyton Manning do this before, and he did it again. And you want to blame Manning because he's hurt and he toughed it out? I don't know. Is that the best thing to do? Whatever. He's now lost in his first playoff game for the ninth time in his career. One and done. Whatever you want to call that. Not even close. I think the next quarterback to do that's done it four times since 1966 or whenever the playoffs started. So the Colts, what did they do? They didn't worry about Peyton Manning. They didn't worry about C.J. Anderson. They didn't worry about Demaryius Thomas, Julie Thomas. They took it to the Broncos, and they took it to them defensively. Their cornerbacks, we thought their defensive backfield, Dave, would not be out to lunch on that day. They got Peyton uncomfortable. Yeah, he's hurt, didn't move off his spot, whatever they want to call it. He didn't have a very good day. You could have played that game for another three quarters and Denver wouldn't have won. That's the thing that was most impressive to me. The game could have kept going on and on and on, and there wasn't one thing fluky about it on the horseshoe side. And that horseshoe, there wasn't one thing lucky about it either. Maybe the Josh Cribbs catch, fumble, punt return. Maybe that's a little bit lucky, but I would have thrown the Colts defense right back out there at that time and said, go ahead, boys, hold them to a field goal.
The Colts started the game in their base defense, which you've seen a lot of, and watched Laron Lander and a couple guys get burned as the Patriots.
Bad matchup.
The Patriots, but the Broncos went right down the field. But the Colts did the smart thing, and they changed their defense. They went back to their passing packages almost all day long, let C.J. Anderson have a few yards,
didn't
amount to a whole heck of a lot. They got enough pressure on Peyton Manning to make him uncomfortable. They didn't bounce him around all day long, but they made him uncomfortable. But more importantly, they put Darius Butler out there, and you've got three cornerbacks that are a pretty darn group of guys out there. Yes, Julius Thomas is running around a little bit banged up himself, so that takes a little of the steam out of it when you put a guy that can keep up with him speed-wise. But give a ton of credit to the Colts defense, because even though they weren't in beating the heck out of Peyton Manning, getting pressure on him, and more importantly, forcing the pass fast enough with defensive backs that can stay with their guys off the line of scrimmage, you force perfection. And Peyton Manning was far from perfect. There's no question about it. And the biggest thing for the Colts defense, when we've seen them have these kind of stretches where they play like this, remember what it was back in the five-game winning streak? I think they had four third-down conversions given up in five games.
Yep.
It was
held Cincinnati to 137 total yards.
It was 4 of 16 yesterday for Denver. Every time they got into a big spot, they threw some kind of exotic look at him, forced the ball out of Peyton Manning's hands quickly, and the defensive backs were all over the guys coming off the line of scrimmage. They put all the pressure on Denver to make those plays, and Denver wasn't precise enough to make those plays, and the Colts defense, they forced those mistakes. Look, 13 points to Denver and Peyton Manning in Denver is, to me, the story of the game. We'll talk about the offense, we'll talk about Andrew Luck, because it deserves its own part also, but 13 points on the road. This is a maligned defense. It was great yesterday.
Well, how many drives did they have after they scored a touchdown on the first drive, the Broncos? They scored 6 points after that.
They had 12 total drives.
So they had 11 drives where they got 6 points, and that's a Colts defense, as you mentioned, that has not been mentioned in the annals of great defenses in the history of the NFL. They took the blueprint from the Seattle Supersonics, Seahawks. What else are they called there in that town? The Mariners, whoever had it, Super Bowl last year. What'd they do? They made Manning throw the ball anywhere but in the middle of the field, trusting his accuracy, trusting they get time to get the pass rush, and they had big-time corners, just like the Colts do. You can play one-on-one and send extra guys. Here's some Manning numbers for you can chew on as we get to the first break tonight. Peyton Manning has lost 13 playoff games in his career. That's the most in NFL history. It's a little skewed because of the divisional playoffs. I get all that. Still, 13 losses is 13 losses. Peyton Manning was 6 for 21 on throws of 5 or more yards. 6 of 21. Yep. One of the greatest regular season quarterbacks you'll ever see in your life. In a big spot last night, resorted to bubble screens, quick flare screens, one-step drop and goes, because A, he couldn't either stand in the pocket, or B, he didn't have the touch down the sidelines for Wallace or Thomas over the middle. And they even had to drag out Wes Welker for a couple over the middle late because there was nothing going on.
Got to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll focus on Andrew Luck and that Colts offense, which played as well as it needed to play. So back in just a couple minutes. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Colts go out to Denver and win the divisional playoff round. They go to the AFC Championship game in New England to face the Patriots. Patriots waxed them pretty good early in the season, but it's a whole new season. And they
sort of the Broncos.
Well, it was a little closer game, but you're right, they were in control.
It was 24-7 before the Colts decided to find any offense on that.
But look, the Colts are a better team now than they were at the beginning of the season. But my only question is, it's still an up and down group.
It is, but it's been up the last 2 weeks.
It's going to the team that has been the best all year long in the AFC. But we can worry about that Wednesday. Right now, you walked out of Denver, holding Denver and Peyton Manning to 13 points. It was a banged up receiving core for Denver, but it doesn't matter. You know, more importantly to me is, and I said this during the course of the game, both offensive line and defensive front for the Colts dominated the play. Watching the game on the defensive front, they didn't let Denver go wild running the ball. Their defensive front, their DBs even, they made sure they jammed receivers. They didn't let them have free rein out there. They controlled the line of scrimmage. And even more so, I thought, on the other side of things for this offense, Andrew Luck was good. There's no question about it. He made a couple bad decisions in a couple spots. Didn't cost the Colts a whole heck of a lot at the end of the day. But more importantly to me, even though the running numbers don't look like it, Glass, Andrew Luck didn't get touched all day long. And this is an offensive line that's been getting him beat up for the last 3 years. And it's finally, for the last couple of weeks, had the same group of people. And three of those guys on the left side, left tackle, left guard, and center, are the guys that I think the Colts wanted at the beginning of the season, finally. Costanzo, Muhort, and Khaled Holmes. There's finally some degree of continuity up there, and it's at a perfect time because you need Andrew Luck upright at this stage.
And no Goster Charles playing either. His high ankle sprain saw Joe Wright's play right tackle most of the night last night, and DeMarcus Ware, Vaughn Miller, they're big ends. Yeah. You didn't hear anything from them in a big game. Aqib Talib was torn to absolute smithereens by T.Y. Hilton. He didn't know if Hilton was coming or going. Water bug, two or three penalties on Talib. Two or three more could have been easily called, were not, for whatever reason. I don't understand how you can call grabbing the jersey for 2.5 quarters and all of a sudden stop calling it, unless you don't see it. But when you see a guy's jersey come out,
all those,
it's terribly
inconsistent. We've been talking about all those rules since the first time the Colts went to England and got mauled.
Or when they went to Denver earlier this season, the guy, Brandon Roby, grabbed Reggie Wayne's jersey. Now, don't call it at all if you're not going to call it, because the Colts defensive backs can handle that kind of battle as well. So what happens is you take everything away from Manning, but the offense for the Colts, after the first two drives of the Colts, they ran the ball once in 12 plays. It was an Andrew Luck scramble.
Yeah.
That was it. And then they went to the steady diet of trying to get Denver off balance. So they kind of sucked him into a false sense of security and then started hitting him with some body shots. They just didn't throw right hooks at him where they're going to drop back and pass, go three and out, and throw the defense right back on the field. That's a recipe for disaster. How do you boss Peyton Manning? Well, before you knew he had two bad legs and could hardly move, well, you want to keep him off the field. You want to run the ball. You want to eat up some clock, and you want to score. Yesterday, the Colts won in spite of themselves. We were talking about that during the game. Pat McAfee was awful. Pat McAfee can run his mouth all he wants after the game about, hey, you guys picked the wrong horse. You did nothing to help the cause yesterday. You didn't hit a punt over 40 yards. First three punts he had straight up in the air that went absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, he had one.
The defense bailed him out. Awful. And then the other one rolled, and then the other one at the end of the game he puts in the end zone. He can't stick inside the 10-yard line. And goes in for a touchback.
Yep.
The other one rolled out at the 19.5. So you want to give him the inside the 20 stat, knock yourself out. But again, you got nothing from him. Vinatieri misses a chippy field goal. That's one he's been making all year long besides the final game of the season. So special teams
Cribs
is terrible.
Cribs
has his gunners block guys into him twice on plays. One play could have killed you for a turnover. It wasn't. So the special teams struggled in that, and Cribs didn't do anything to help you either. Those decisions weren't good. You call fair catches on those. You don't even put yourself
in
there.
He doesn't know what a fair catch is.
Chuck Pagano said in his press conference today he's going to learn what a fair catch is, lest he be dead and lest he wants to keep playing, because you can't go to New England and make mistakes like that. What else? The coverage teams were decent on punts and kicks. There weren't a lot.
Well, again, Andrew Luck threw two interceptions that were ill-advised.
You know,
one of them didn't matter.
Same distance as McAfee's punts.
Yeah, the other one was a midfield with a minute left to go in the half.
In the half. And
that's a bad mistake.
And they only got
a
field goal out of it because the Colts defense.
Good job by the defense.
Did exactly what they needed to do. So, again, this was not a pretty game. The Colts had another false start after a false start after a false start. Penalties being drawn off by themselves. They're trying to get those guys to jump. The Colts are jumping offsides. I think they ended up with, 10 penalties to 3? So they're minus 7 in the penalty department. They're minus 1 in the turnover department. But the good news was, Dave, they were plus 11 on the scoreboard when it was over. So, no, it wasn't a Colts game. And that's what I kind of like, and like it even more. I thought the Colts would win the game. I told you that last Wednesday. I'm a Luck homer. I am. I think he's that good a player where he can make things like that happen, and he's awfully good and can change the games. But if the Colts had to play perfect yesterday to win that game, I would feel much worse going into Sunday, which we'll talk about on Wednesday. I got that. But this wasn't a wow, that was the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
They can't possibly top that again. Yeah, they can.
Oh, they can play a lot better.
So that's the good news.
The question is, can they do it against New England?
Can they do it against New England? And each time they've played New England, they've been absolutely smashed. I got it.
Yeah.
But again, Hakeem Nicks, big play. T.Y., only one drop yesterday. Fleener, only had one drop yesterday.
Yeah.
Dwayne Allen catches one when Talib is holding him all day long and 3 yards into the end zone.
Yep.
He just flexed and Talib bounces off of him. Luck singes it in there. So the offense did exactly what they wanted to do. You didn't get a ton of big penalties that killed you.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get a ton of – I mean, false starts aren't going to hurt you. But when you got a quarterback on 3rd and 16 can hit for 32, on 3rd and 9 get you 17, on 3rd and 10 can run for 15 – but that dimension is absolutely fantastic for the Colts offense.
Well, 333-2665 is a phone number. Look, Andrew Luck is as good as it gets right now, and any quarterback, and especially the good ones, are going to be better when they do not have pressure. And that has been what's been amazing about Andrew Luck. We've talked about it time after time on this show. The Colts are lucky that they've got a guy in Luck that doesn't seem to be rattled by pressure. It didn't matter yesterday.
He's not a quarterback.
That's a good pass rush for Denver most of the year. They were non-existent. They didn't get anywhere close to Andrew Luck all day long. I mean, maybe the first drive or two, but after that, it was absolute domination up front. And the best part about it, of course, is they continue to spread the ball around. Eight different guys caught a ball. Seven of them caught two or more. Dan Heron caught eight. Luck was taking what was given to him.
Again.
He had a lot of time to sit back there and pick out the guys that he wanted and let a couple deep routes and key points develop for him, a couple crossing routes develop for him. He's going to make the right play most of the time if he's got some time, and he showed it to you yesterday, even with a couple bad mistakes. They get the ball. Here's the other thing. They get the ball, and what does the offensive line do when there's about 12 minutes left in the game, 13 minutes left
in
the game?
8-minute drive.
8.5 minutes they hold on to the ball. 9 out of 13 plays were running game balls. This is Zerlin Tipton carrying the ball. Boom Heron carrying the ball.
Well, you know,
this is not Ahmad Bradshaw or Edgerrin James or Eric Dickerson or Marshall Faulk or some of the backs we've had.
And they're not running behind Jackie Slater, John Hanna,
yeah, exactly.
Dave Remington either.
They just took it and stuffed it right down their throat.
And Denver was out on their feet because they had run out of gas. They had been doing the heavy lifting for most of the game. Peyton Manning went 3 and out, I want to say, 5 times of those 11 drives after the touchdown. So about half of his drives, he was 3 and out. So that defense was right back on the field. And the Colts, I don't remember.
8 minutes more. Plus eight in time of possession for the Colts.
And there you have it. And the Colts made every big play they had to. Got a little help from the officiating on that Cribs play. But the rule states the punter is not a receiver. He is a runner when he catches that. That's why he can be down. It's totally different than the Dez Bryant thing. You've heard that all day long. We're not going to talk about it on this show. It's done and dusted with. You don't like the rule, that's fine. But the deal is when you're a punt receiver, you are a runner. You are not a receiver in a passing game. There's a different set of rules how that works. And I thought I didn't think the Colts would get the break because you never get those breaks, it seems like. But the way they said it, he caught the ball. He was down. Then the ball went out.
He was down.
There you go.
But here's the point. Nanoseconds worked out in your favor in a couple cases. And you're exactly right. They didn't play the best game that they've played all year.
Good.
But they played a physical game. They owned both line of scrimmages. And I think you can make up for some mistakes when you do that. And, of course, having one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, you'd like to have those. You like to have those jump balls back. But those were interceptions that were both recovered. I think one on the 40-yard line and one on, like, the 35-yard line.
The only one I freak out about is the one right before half.
Sure.
Because you give them free points, a free chance of
you
points.
You do, but there's a
– the other one was a punt down to the 24, which was almost as good as Pat McAfee was doing anyway.
That was kind of the angle. If they have to punt from 2 steps into their end zone, who knows? But you know what? He didn't take advantage of the altitude, which should have helped.
Yeah, I know.
So, again, he's not going to have 2 bad games in a row. Vinatieri, of course, isn't going to have 2 bad games in a row. And Luck will argue that he should have played better. But the key yesterday was you didn't have Dan Heron dropping the ball. You didn't have Zerlon Tipton dropping the ball.
No fumbles.
You didn't have Cody Fleener bouncing the ball up in the air where their secondary is getting bailed out of jail when we're driving down their throat. The Colts got out of their own way. The penalties hurt. Yeah, clean it up. Yeah, the special teams hurt. Yeah, clean it up. Luck, clean up those decisions. No problem. That's why I think the future is bright. Peyton Manning lost his, what did I tell you, his 9th 1-and-done. Tom Brady's in his 9th AFC championship next weekend.
There you go.
Those are facts. Do
Colts will
them.
Be there.
Do so, what you want.
Playing well coming out of Denver and heading to New England. We'll talk more about that game on Wednesday. When we get back, Hoosiers win over the weekend against a ranked Ohio State team. We'll cover that in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Programming notes, we'll be back with you Wednesday night, of course, as normal, 6 o'clock. IU is home to Penn State tomorrow night, so we will not have a live Joe Smith Sports Talk tomorrow night. And we'll all be watching the Penn State, and we will have a best of here on the show or on the radio station. Friday, we've got high school basketball back at you. South heads out to Edgewood. I don't think South's been out there for a while. I could be wrong, but Chalk Talk 7 o'clock, tip-off 7:30 for that. And then on Sunday, we've got both championship games starting at 2 o'clock with pregame of Green Bay at Seattle and then bleeding over to the Colts at New England. And we are obligated to carry the national Westwood One broadcast there. So Bob Lamy, sadly, done for the season for Colts fans, but we will have both championship games, including, of course, the Colts at New England in the nightcap on Sunday here on WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Hoosiers hosted Ohio State at noon on Saturday. Love those noon games, don't you? Got the whole rest of your day to sit around.
Better than 9 p.m. at night.
Find something else to watch. Yes, well, I agree with you there. But ranked Ohio State hadn't really played much of anything in their or beaten anybody, I should say, in their schedule. But you play who you have scheduled in front of you. And we were talking with the Colts about not playing your best game and winning. This is two out of three games in the Big Ten. They got blasted at Michigan State, did the Hoosiers, but two out of three games otherwise, the Hoosiers have not played what is the prettiest game by any stretch, what you would chalk up as the things IU needs to do to win these games, and yet has still managed to win these games.
Well, then there's two reasons why. Number one, the competition's about 500 times better, and Indiana shot their worst up percentage from the three-point line, their worst makes from the three-point line. Mm-hmm. The first three games of the conference season. So those are the facts. Yeah. Again, do what you want with them. They made seven threes against Michigan State or Nebraska. They made five against Michigan State. They made four against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Those are the three worst three-point shooting outputs. So that tells me immediately the defense is just a little bit better than perhaps Texas Southern or some of the other other teams we played against. So Indiana has to adjust. All their scoring is down. They've had their three worst outputs points-wise of the season as well in conference play. Well, it's not surprising. These teams watch film. These teams have coaches that are better than the coaches you face for the most part, and they have better players and better talent. So how do you adjust when you figure it out? And to be fair, Indiana, Dave, I don't think has really adjusted yet. Maybe they've acclimated. But again, Saturday's victory, and all victories are great, isn't going up in any museum or is going to be used as an instructional video anywhere at any level. And they win. That's the good news. They're 2-1 in league play. That's the great news. But it's the consistency factor. Indiana has the second most wins against top 25 opposition besides Kansas over the last 4 or 5 years. They're now 11-2 at home against teams ranked in the top 25. But I'll point out they lost at home last year to Penn State and Northwestern.
And Nebraska.
So there's that word. It's consistency. It's all over the park again. Remember, Troy Williams last week averaged 7.5 points and 6 rebounds. Or you want to talk about his second career double-double on Saturday when he played out of the park.
Heck yeah.
But you can't do one without the other for me because I don't look at it that way. Well, James Blackman had a terrible Monday, had a great recovery on Saturday.
Yeah,
Troy Williams, terrible Monday, great recovery on Saturday.
Here is the reason that's important to keep in mind for folks.
The recovery.
last year, as you mentioned, they beat some big teams, including number three-ranked Wisconsin
right.
at home. They had some good wins at home. There's no question they were competitive. But then they would turn around and they would either go on the road and have a stinker or they had a couple stinkers at home. What you saw in the pre-conference schedule is, you lose at home to Eastern Washington. You make it a tight game against Lamar and one of the North Carolina teams they played or somebody else. Some of those games were tighter than they should have been and a loss to Eastern Washington. So even this year, we're not entirely sure and can't be entirely sure that this team is going to take Penn State as seriously as they take the ranked Buckeyes coming into town. That's the fully legitimate question heading into tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Do they take them seriously?
You can't
and
be
play
the,
with that intensity because if you do, you win this game easily.
You can't. Immature teams want to be the underdog night in and night out because it's the easy way out. You have to lead from the front sometimes. And Yogi Ferrell's about the only guy on this roster that knows anything about playing on a big-time basketball team.
Yeah.
He was a freshman when Indiana was number one in the country for most of the season in 2011-12. I can't get these. When they split the years, I can never keep up with them. His freshman year. None of these other kids have ever had to deal with any expectations. Yogi had to. He had to come in as a true freshman, play 38 minutes, and run a point on a team that was number one in the country. He's done it. He's been there. He's shown you that. You ever see Yogi miss foul shots in the last 30 seconds of a game? No, he doesn't.
Not very
often. I'd love to see his final minute free throw percentage, and I bet it's 95 or better.
Yeah, he's great.
But he's been there and he's done that. These other guys have to learn to figure that out. Last year, sure, you beat number three Wisconsin. Here's how it worked. You go on the road last year. What was the first road game last year?
Illinois.
New Year's Eve, overtime, right there, right in the guts of it, a little close to it. You go home, what happens? You beat Michigan State?
Michigan State was five. You lost to Michigan State.
You lost to Michigan State.
They got handled pretty well in that one.
And then you go win a road game against Penn State to get your ship sailed. Then they lost a road game to a bad Northwestern team.
Well, they beat Wisconsin. That's what made it so frustrating. They go to Penn State and win a game until they figure it out. They come home to Wisconsin. They beat Wisconsin on national television. And then and then they go lose at Northwestern.
9-2, the game opens. First TV timeout or so, and you think, geez, here you go again. What do these guys learn from the game against Michigan State? It looked they came out flat as a pancake. You never liked the noon game on Saturday at home, especially with students not in town. But what they did is they dug themselves out of it, and they didn't dig themselves out of it. I told you, they only made four three-pointers for the game. That's not it. Tom Crean says the ball needs to go through what? The paint. Troy Williams gets more dunks in the paint than he does behind the three-point line, doesn't he? You get more layups around the basket than you do at the three-point line. There has to be plan B. If whatever showed you, if you learned anything, if you never watched basketball in your life and you watch the game on Monday, when you don't make jump shots, you are simple to guard.
Yeah.
Simple. And Indiana chose not to be that way on Saturday after the first 4 minutes. Yep. They decided to get movement. They decided to attack the basket. And it all started with Colin Hartman taking Amir Williams to the goal, trying to shoot a hook shot. He gets Williams a foul. And it was like, wow. If Hartman can do it, the rest of us should do it. One thing you liked about James Blackman Jr. was, he has to shoot open threes, folks. He's not going to stop shooting because
you want him to.
He's going to make more than he misses
it out eventually.
When it gets there. But he scored 18 points with only making one 3-point basket. He had 15 points other ways. What? Driving to the goal, hitting little floaters, getting to the foul line. That's a sign of being mature. Remember, Blackman was
he had to be reminded of that. If you remember one of the early visuals is Crean screaming at him after a bad three-pointer, drive the ball, drive the ball.
Sure.
And he did. He went into the basket. He got himself some points.
That's what freshmen do.
Exactly.
And if you remember against Michigan State, he settled for everything until he finally scored a basket. What was it? It was a 5-foot floater in the lane. It wasn't a three. It wasn't something from outside. So, again, that's what happens with young guys that aren't used to playing against great competition night in and night out and practicing against great competition. You're going to have to let them learn and let them breathe, and they're freshmen. That's fine. I get all of that. But moving forward, you want to tell me how great Hannah Perea is again from that double-double against Nebraska? The guy had 10 fouls in 12 minutes last week.
He was out in a minute and a half.
It was seven.
Two fouls in the first minute and a half.
It was 114 seconds, 116 seconds against Michigan State, something like that. And I don't understand this in the press conference. Tom said once he gets his first one, you know he's getting a second one. Well, what does that mean? Don't take him out after the first one.
Yeah.
But here's my other thing. If Perea's not giving you any minutes down the stretch because he's in foul trouble, play him. Play him from the word go and let him get in some kind of rhythm because
I don't know that there is any. The only rhythm he seems to be in is getting fouls.
That's right. So let him foul
the bigger problem to me is that his first foul, either his first or second foul in each of the last three games has been on a moving screen.
Yeah.
It's been a moving screen.
And the other part of it's just a reach one. It's not like he's nailing a guy preventing a dunk or something. Let him have it. It seems like he's a half step slow. He's not ready to play.
Right.
He's poor positionally. He's late arriving, and it's the same old, same old. So those are things that are going to continue. That's part of the consistency. The Big Ten is a wide-open NASCAR race right now, and everybody's on the same lap.
Well, I think we've proven, though, that right now this team is going right past Hunter Mascara Perea. And dealing with Colin Hartman and Emmett Holt in whatever role that they can give them on a given night. Colin Hartman was the guy that came in for Perea, not Emmett Holt to start
off. No, it can't be.
Minute and a half in, it was Colin Hartman, and he made several plays on both ends that were 20 times better than what we saw at a Perea.
Career
the last
high,
two
three
games.
Blocks. Yeah, there you go. 6'5", swatting it around.
I don't want him
like
starting
no problem.
At center all year long. But
that's the issues. The issues is you have to, besides Yogi, who's done this? And that's the problem. I get it now, but how many games is it? Three in the conference?
Mm-hmm.
What, 12 out of the conference? 15 games?
16 total.
16 games. That's more than half a season, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're going to play 31. You got to go now. And this is the year we've seen in the first 3 weeks of the Big Ten. What are we? We're not even 3 weeks in. We start on New Year's Eve, right?
Yeah.
So what are we, 14, 15 days in? Whatever it could be. This is a wide-open disaster. Wisconsin, Trayvon Jackson got foot surgery. He's out 3 weeks.
He's out 3
Frank
to 6
Kaminsky's
weeks.
Frank
Kaminsky's got a concussion. So suddenly they're coming back after losing to Rutgers.
And with an 11-point lead at halftime. Let's not forget about that. So Maryland, They're out there. Michigan State is right at the Michigan's right at the ship.
Sure.
Ohio State's found some footing. There's nothing in this league where you say, well, geez, that we there's no chance of doing this or that. Maybe at Wisconsin's about it, and that's if they're healthy. But you can't play shorthanded. You can't have games where you have 40% of your starting lineup not score a point, Michigan State. You can't do that. Those are the things. And Dave, if it's last year and you got these three or four premium teams and you're taking some lumps because you're a little bit young,
right.
I got you. That's not the excuse this year. This excuse is Minnesota hasn't won a game yet.
Look, here's the key.
And Penn State hasn't won a game
yet. We haven't gotten there yet, but the key is a game like tomorrow night where last year's team, among the many things they slipped up on, what last year's team did is it showed up in a big game. And then proceeded to follow that up by not showing up in a what would be perceived as an easy game at home, the game that everybody chalks up in the win column at the beginning of the year. And let's be fair, right now for Penn State, that's a game you chalk up in the win column right now for this Indiana team. So this, to me, is more of a game kind of telling you where this team is right now than the Ohio State game. I expected them to beat Ohio State, not because I thought they're 10 times better and ought to blow them out of the water, none of that sort of thing, because I know that they bring it against the teams that have their attention. It's the teams that don't have your attention that this team didn't have mess around with. They messed around with last year and didn't take seriously. This team has to make sure it does that. It has to take care of business because it's going to have those games at Wisconsin. You played Michigan State once. I think you got to play them again. You're going to have a couple of those games. There's no question. You can win the home ones. You can't do is stub your toe and lose the ones at home that you need to win and should win when you get those games. 333-2665 is a phone number. Let's bring in Roy. How you doing, Roy?
Pretty good. I think you guys are still not looking at the fact that with a three-guard offense, we
four-guard offense. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah.
four and a half.
How many times was Troy Williams in the middle of the zone on Saturday?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. But you know, there is no excuse when you have that many guards that you turn the ball over 15 times, you know. Aaron Kraft graduated, you know. I could understand it last year.
Yeah, all of a sudden Shannon Scott's hitting 50% from the field. What happened with
that's
that?
Still a pretty good defensive team. It's not Aaron Kraft, there's no question.
They're
a good defensive team.
They are. And the one thing about the Indiana handling the ball, sometimes it's not about the ball handling, it's the decisions made handling the ball, and there is a difference. It's not the heads down going into dark corners. It's the heads up, and we're maybe going too fast or trying to squeeze a pass.
Three or four places at least where they dribbled into something and bounce it off
Colin
the leg.
Hartman had the ball in front of him, and a guy reached out and took it away from him underneath the basket and laid the ball in. And that's a guy at 6'5", 210, or two, whatever it is. So, these things happen. And you know why it happens is because this Indiana team is not at that level yet where they make other teams pay, because Colin Hartman didn't play last year. Hannah Pereira-Mosqueda didn't play last year. James Blackman didn't play last year. Robert Johnson didn't play last year.
Two things real quick
with
the turnovers,
though,
too.
I'm with you, though. It should be better.
Since the beginning of the season, they have been better on turnover numbers. They're not always great, but they have been better. The other side of that too here recently is Yogi Ferrell is not handling the ball as much as he was earlier in the season. Now, what exactly that means, I'm not entirely sure, but they are getting the ball into several other people's hands now to help take that load off of him, and I think they're asking him to do more on the defensive end, which is what predicates that. But it's in a lot of guys' hands right now. So you've got a guy in Troy Williams you're trying to get acclimated to a ball handling role he's not had before. He's making some mistakes with it too.
We give away, we're almost minus one in assist turnover margin per game, 13th in the league just in front of Maryland. I'm looking at the stats right in front of me. Indiana's assist to turnover ratio is 9th. It's 1.2. 1.6 is leading. So just from a standpoint of how many turnovers it is, Indiana turns it over as a team, 12.1 a game. Minnesota has at 13. Nebraska's 13.8. Minnesota's 13.6. Purdue's 13.4. And we're right in the middle of the pack, if not in the – we're not bad in turnovers. Not bad at all. Wisconsin's only 8.3.
It's much better now than it was at the beginning of the season.
And the reason why that is that you have better players. The rebounding, we're great. Number one offensively, offensive rebounding, number one in the league. And rebounding defense, we are 12th of 14. So somewhere in the middle is your answer on some of that. But when you have these guys, you have to bleed them because there's really nowhere else you can go to. I don't think Troy Williams handling the ball yet is where Indiana needs to be.
Not a lot. Not frequently.
I mean, you see running hook shots. You see jump passes up and under the air. And again, until these guys get some more experience, and they need to hurry up. You're right, because I'm going back to my point right before you called, Roy. This is not a runaway freight train by three or four teams in the Big Ten this year. This is a lot of, hey, everybody's in this. You better take advantage of it, because there's not a team with four NBA guys kicking everybody's rear end. You've got to figure out how to make it work in a year like this, no matter what your problem is. And you need guys like Perea to show up every night, and Williams to show up every night, and Blackman to show up every night. I'll give the freshmen a little bit of a break, just like I did when Perea was a freshman and Troy was a freshman. You got to let those guys, they don't play.
Outside of shooting slumps, they're in it every game at least.
Who is their leading rebounder at Michigan State? Johnson and Blackman with six. Yeah. Who's your second leading rebounder behind Williams on Saturday?
Blackman. Yeah.
Blackman. He rebounds every night.
Yeah, absolutely.
And whether they like it or not, that's what goes on. Roy, good stuff. We got to hit a break. We always appreciate you checking in. Roy Smart, right. When you don't always defensively rebound as well, you can't give away extra possessions. That's you can't do it. The good news is Indiana is on the offensive glass crashing happy, and you saw that Saturday.
Yep.
Well, nobody thinks we could rebound. Nobody believed in us. Well, I don't believe in you tomorrow night. How's that, guys?
Well, there you go.
What do you need? What is your carrot? What's your motivation? The fans would love to help.
Back to plus +9 rebounding margin in this game. They got destroyed at Michigan State. But of late, they've been better on the boards. They need to continue that tomorrow night. We'll preview that when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. David Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Hoosiers beat the 22nd ranked Buckeyes over the weekend and then bring Penn State to town tomorrow night. Again, these are the kind of games that this team, if it's different, and it does, it looks different than last year right now. But if it is truly different, this is the game it doesn't sleepwalk through. It wins this game. It doesn't mess around with the games that it's supposed to win. It just goes out and does it. And last year's team did not do that.
Remember how hard it is to win on the road in the Big Ten? Well, that's exactly what should happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Maryland beats Illinois, or Illinois beats Maryland without Revonte Rice.
Lost at home last year to Penn State, Northwestern, and Nebraska, teams that you think you at least should win at home.
That's why that record against teams with ranked in the top 25 is a little bit of pyrite. Because you back it up with, it's good that you beat those teams, but you haven't taken advantage of it.
It's a little damning, certainly after last year when you saw some of the losses they had.
A team
that does that well against the ranked teams.
When you play to the level of your opponent, is a team that, that those are teams that play to the level of their opponent.
So this game to me is the prove it more game, and it doesn't seem like it because it's just Penn State to a lot of people.
All right, you know
it's important for them.
And here's why it's important. I'll tell you why it's important. How about this? After Penn State, Indiana goes to Illinois. How much success have you had at Illinois in the last 20 years?
Not lots.
Not a lot. Why? Big Ten's tough place to win on the road.
We only had Eric Gordon there once.
And he banked in something to save us, and poor number 52, the big 6'9" center, missed about 18 free throws that game. It was great.
Bring Maryland to town.
We'll see what Maryland's up to. Right now, Maryland's healthy. That's a pretty positive thing to have in this league right now. You go to Ohio State, you go to Purdue, and then you come home for Rutgers, and then you go to Wisconsin. That's a brutal 6-game stretch. 4 on the road, right? 2 at home, and it's Rutgers and Maryland at home, and you can argue that Maryland's just as deep and as talented as anyone. I've watched them
home
play.
Home may not matter in that
game. I've watched them play 3 times now. They played Minnesota and blew the doors off them a couple Saturdays ago, and in the first 8 minutes of the half, I believe they had 6 different players hit a 3.
And here's the thing. IU ends up with 4 of their last 6 at home. It is a light stretch down the stretch as much as you can in the Big Ten.
Tell me how Indiana's finished the last 5 years.
You got to get it done when you're supposed to in this stretch to get to that point in time.
And we know how the Hoosiers have finished over the last few years, it's not barnstorming.
Look, if you're going to stumble in this group, it makes sense, but not in this game, not against Penn State. Hoosiers win?
Against Penn State?
Yeah.
Yeah, they win by 15. They absolutely knock them out of the park. Penn State's easy to guard. They lost their 5th best player today. He's suspended from team activities because he's not representing Penn State in the way that he's signed up to do so. So throw that in. I don't know. Maybe that helps Penn State. Sometimes, Dave, when you get a bad apple out of the bunch, things turn. But
we'll see if he had
16 and 4 3-pointers in their last outing. So it wasn't like he was dead weight and he's guy number 11 or 12 on the bench.
Hey, defense, number 2.
That's one guy you got to guard.
He's leading the Big Ten in scoring.
Make everybody else beat you. Yeah, but it seems like every time Indiana does get beat, some no-name guy has a big-time game. So you've got to keep it balanced.
Speaking of big-time games, we've got just 2 minutes here to look at the national championship game tonight. Ohio State, the surprise of the group.
No question.
Facing Oregon. But I'll tell you what's what stood out to me in the Ohio State-Alabama game in particular was I think Ohio State is the best up front out of all four of the teams that were in this thing. They just absolutely steamrolled an Alabama team that plays as many professional players and professional defensive looks as humanly possible. They just ran it right
down the front. Nick Saban had 30-something days to prepare for a third-string quarterback and played one college football game and put him under zero pressure the entire night. With all those defensive looks, with all of those defensive players, with all of that, Urban Meyer needs fair due because playing three quarterbacks. We played three quarterbacks in a season. Yeah. I know those are a little bit different. The coaching advantage by a mile, no offense to Helfrich, goes to Urban Meyer.
Oh, you got to 100%. Sure.
I think beating an Alabama team with a third-string quarterback, if anybody has any confidence or momentum, Florida State literally handed Oregon the ball.
Handed him in the third quarter. Turnovers. Florida State was absolutely awful. Oregon put pressure on them, but they just absolutely fell apart.
And then
to be fair, again, Oregon was in pretty good control of the game at that point.
They were.
And then Florida State just.
But the reason they were in control at that point, it was 18-13 at halftime.
Yeah,
this was not a runaway game.
It was not a runaway
game. Kid gets a 16-yard gain, fumbles. So the first down's gone, the possession's gone. Next drive later, fumble.
Yeah.
Two drives later, interception.
It was an absolute destruction in the middle of the third quarter.
Oregon put them to the sword for it, which they should have. I'm fine with that. No problem. But at the end of the day, the knock on Oregon by the experts, are they big and tough enough on both sides of the ball to absorb what Ohio State's going to give them? The sharp bettors say they're not. They're taking Ohio State 6, 5.5, 5. They think Ohio State's going to do the business tonight.
I'll tell you what, watching Oregon, they are more physical than people give them credit for, but I don't think they're as physical as Ohio State. Ohio State wins by 10.
And the last 7 favorites in the national championship game have won the game. Oregon's the favorite, so weigh that out while you're watching it tonight. It'd be good for the Big Ten to get back in the conversation. No doubt about it.
And then get sick of hearing about Urban Meyer for the next
20
months.
Jim
hey,
Harbaugh,
folks, music means
that.
We got to head on out of here. We'll be back Wednesday, so tune in then. You've been in the zone.